This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, as I shared with you on Christmas Day, I love to get out for a walk, even at this time of year, when frankly it can be rather cold, rather muddy and rather wet. And one of the joys from about now is watching the natural world gradually beginning a whole new chapter. Seeing the first snowdrop or primrose peep out from the dead leaves of last year, or hearing the noise from birds just change, or see the very first catkins bouncing around in the wind. All of these small things are a joy to watch out for, but we can turn these joyful sightings into crucial signs by reporting them to the Woodland Trust's Nature's Calendar project. And to make our sightings even more important sounding, there's a name for this, phenology. And that makes you a phenologist. So let's hear how we can all become phenologists with Alex Marshall, Citizen Science Assistant at the Woodland Trust. Alex, I very much appreciate your time with us today. Could you just start by explaining to us why our recordings of the signs of the changing seasons are so important?
Well, first of all, Nature's Calendar is the only database we have in the UK that records timings of the changing seasons. So other countries, such as in Europe, they collect phenological data, which is the timing of biological events, as part of their weather data collection. So for example, we have the Met Office. However, our Met Office doesn't collect phenology data. So the only record we have is from Nature's Calendar. It's really important to collect this kind of data because nature's linked, species rely on each other and impact one another, whether that's through predation or herbivory, pollination, migration, reproduction, other behaviours. And all of these different interactions have specific timings or triggers for when they occur. So if timings for these interactions change, if they get earlier or later, they can have knock-on effects with the other species that are connected to them. So it basically gives us an indication of how nature is responding to changes in the environment, changes in the weather, but also changes over a longer period of time with climate change.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned over longer periods of time. This isn't something that's new, is it? How far back do your records go?
Yes, they actually go back to 1736, and that was when there was a guy called Robert Marsham who lived over in Norfolk, and he recorded the signs of spring on his land. And then since then, there's been various different bits of data from various different sources, and we digitized it all, and we have over 3 million records now in the database going over about 300 years, which is pretty cool.
Wow, that is amazing. And presumably it's that continuity, it's that volume of sightings that actually makes this so worthwhile, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It allows us to compare what's happening now with what was happening hundreds of years ago.
Fantastic. Now, the effect of human-induced climate change on nature does seem to be quite relentlessly bleak. And I just wondered if Nature's Calendar has kind of enabled anything positive. Is there some sort of more cheerier thing that we're looking at here?
Yeah, there's bits of both. There are evidence of more negative things, but there are positive things as well. So with some species, we are seeing them be able to react together to the changes. So they've evolved together over time to coincide. For example, the bumblebee emerges at the same time as the bluebell flowers. So there are some species that are reacting in the same time frame. So that's a positive. But of course, there are others that are not keeping to the same time. So there's a bit of both.
Okay. Well, that's good to know that at least we are seeing some positive data here as well. So there are certain things that you would like us to, it's not just go out and spot anything to do with the changing seasons. You have chosen some specific things that you want us to spot. How have you chosen those things?
They were chosen for a variety of reasons. Firstly, they're relatively easy to spot and to record. Most of them, there's a few exceptions, appear across the whole of the UK. Secondly, we have long-term data for these species, so it allows us to compare results from now with historic data. And thirdly, and probably most importantly, they all respond to environmental temperature, so we can use it as a tool to look at the impacts of climate change.
All right. OK, so quite carefully chosen then, as you say, for some very good reasons. And could you just give us, just as an example, some things that we could be looking out for over the next few weeks, couple of months, something like that?
Yes. So over the next few months, there are a few things to look out for, including the first frog spawn in the pond or the first newts. So if you live by a pond, that's one to look for. Another really popular, this is our most popular record, is the snowdrop flowering. So if you know where there's any snowdrops. And thirdly, we have a hazel flowering in January. And this is a really interesting one that we'd love more records for, because we're starting to see the hints of a trend of hazel flowering getting earlier. So if you can think of some hazel near you at home, yeah, that's a great one to choose and to look out for.
Okay, well, that's good to know that you're particularly looking for that. I'm just thinking now, and I'm thinking, would I know what a hazel tree looked like, particularly with no leaves and no hazelnuts on it? So is there any help given with those identification skills, or do we already need to be quite confident on our nature ID?
Great question. No, there's definitely help available. So if you go onto our website, which you can access on your phone as well as a computer, for each species event and each species, we give some guidance on identification. There's also the Woodland Trust tree identification app if you're focusing on trees. And we have other resources like webinars. So a few months ago, we delivered a tree identification webinar. So those can all be found on our website as well.
Okay, so actually quite a good learning opportunity if you're not really very good with your nature ID. So perhaps if we're thinking, okay, then I could give this a go and perhaps I'd be able to find some hazel, then how would we best be get started?
I think the best thing to do is to go onto our website, so this www.naturescalendar.woodlandtrust.org.uk, and first of all, take a look at the species you can record and what takes your fancy. There's over 150 different events to look for, including plants and animals, and one fungi as well, if you like fungi. And then once you've decided, then go into your local area, somewhere where you can visit, ideally once a week, and locate the species that you want to record. And if you've chosen a bird, for example, it's quite difficult to locate a bird. But what you would do there is choose an area of land, for example, your garden or the local park, and just visit that place once a week and look out for the event that you're recording. Then you can go back to the website, sign in and upload your records.
Okay, so it sounds like ideally we'd choose either something that we know is in our garden or something, I don't know, perhaps we walk past a, for instance, a hazelnut tree on our dog walk every day or once a week or something. So something that we're not going to have to make a special trip for, but something that actually we're just going to have some interaction with, we're going to see quite regularly. So it's not extra effort, it's just adding value. That's really good. And actually, if we're short of time, how can we sort of get most value for you out of our time? What would you suggest that we did?
I think the best thing would be to focus on one or two things rather than try and look for everything. And just choose one thing So for example, if there is a tree outside your office at work, that would be the ideal thing because, like you say, you don't have to make a dedicated trip. You walk past it every day. And the longevity of the record is what makes it so valuable. So if there's just one thing you record every year and nothing else, that is super valuable as opposed to trying to look for lots of different things.
Okay, that's good. So we need to think about this in the long term, really, to get the best value. And actually, that's particularly valuable throughout the year as well, isn't it? Because our autumn sightings are even more important than perhaps our spring sightings. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, definitely. So autumn hasn't been recorded for as long as spring. So we only have from the year 2000 records for autumn. So the more records we can get, the more we can begin to work out if there's any kind of trends, like is autumn getting later or earlier? We're not entirely sure. So yeah, it's really important to keep those records up.
Okay, so even at this early point in the year, if we could just resolve to just keep up our citizen science right the way through the year, then that sounds like it would be helpful. Okay, and finally, Alex, I just wondered what you thought about the idea of children contributing to this. Do you have any junior contributors, or is this something that children could usefully help with?
Yeah, definitely. I think children are great phenologists because they're so observant. I think, well, everybody can be observant, but children seem to have a knack with phenology, I think. So on our website, you do have to be 18 to add the record. However, that doesn't mean you have to be 18 to take part. We have people of all ages taking part, and I definitely recommend this is something that children can get involved with.
So have children in the past been able to contribute anything to the records that you have? Is this something that they have actually done?
It is. There's actually a very famous lady who sadly passed away last year at the age of 96, and her name was Jean Coombs, and she started recording the signs of spring at the age of 11, and she actually continued recording for her entire life, and she became basically known for her phenology, and she had the longest phenological record by a single person in the world, which is pretty amazing. She was awarded an OBE in 2008, and it just goes to show that it's not something just for adults, and if you start early, you can have an amazing data set of a long span of time.
Well, yes, and also see for yourself, yeah, actually, the changes that are going on around you. Make that connection with nature that we know is so important.
Absolutely.
She sounds like an amazing person.
Yeah, she does.
Brilliant. Well, it would be lovely, wouldn't it, to have some junior phenologists joining the rank to form the phenologists of the future. Alex, that was really interesting. Thank you so much for telling us about that.
Thank you for having me.
I was talking there to Alex Marshall, Citizen Science Assistant at the Woodland Trust. Now, I'll pop a link that you'll need if you'd like to become a phenologist too into the notes that go with the podcasts of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. And if you would like to make sure that your tree identification skills are up to scratch so you can tell your beech from your birch and your hornbeam from your hazel, even when they are not sporting telltale leaves, then the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust have got a couple of winter tree identification walks coming up, one at Hertford Heath and one at Cassiobury Park, both beautiful woodlands cared for by the Trust. And I've been on one of their winter tree ID walks, and it really was very good. Interesting, not just for beginners, but also for those with some prior knowledge. And the walk leader did make a special effort to keep the children on the walk interested too. So if you're interested, check out the events page of the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, where you can also book. Right, now I've got a message for you from local author, eco-renovation guru and social media sensation, Judith Leary-Joyce. She'd like to tell you about a TEDx climate salon that she is hosting on the 20th of January at the Harpenden Friends Meeting House, starting at 7 in the evening and finishing at 10. Now, the TEDx salon format, she says, is more informal than the TED conferences that you might have heard about, with a lot more time for discussion and sharing of ideas. The theme for this TEDx salon is going to be living the green life, and the aim of it is to encourage participants to share their own experiences to help others while helping to define their own next green steps for 2025. Now, there's going to be two talks. Judith is going to speak about greening her life over the last 50 years, and Emma Fletcher, who is the Low Carbon Homes Director at Octopus Energy, is going to tell us how she brought her village, Swaffham Prior, together to become the first fossil-free heating scheme. Now, this is a perfect opportunity to share your experiences and set a personal green goal for 2025. Well, as Judith says, that sounds like a great event for everyone, wherever we are on our green journey. And I'll be particularly interested to hear from Emma Fletcher. Swaffham Prior is quite the legend in sustainable heating circles, and I'll be really interested to hear how Emma managed to inspire her village to undertake such an amazing project. So if you'd like to hear more, if you'd like to share your ideas on sustainability and to be motivated by other people's ideas, then do sign up for Judith's TEDx Salon. And again, I'll pop the link into the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. So have you spotted any signs of spring? Well, as per every year, the snowdrops in my front garden came into flower the week before Christmas, which I find quite remarkable, just the same time every year. How about you? Have you spotted any snowdrops yet? Or any catkins, perhaps? Love to hear about them. Via email, I'm on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com, or look out for Environment Matters on Mix 92.6, on X and on Facebook. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.